Rachel, but instead he married the wrong sister. He married Leah. And until the next morning, he didn't know who he married. When I was a little boy, I kind of believed the story. When I got older, it's got very hard to buy. like really? How is that possible? But it's like, ein mikra yetze midei pshutei. The scripture does not depart from its literal meaning. So if that's the story in the Torah, that's got to be the story. And the question is, in seriousness, how in heaven is that possible? How could Yaakov not have known who he was marrying? How could he end up marrying the wrong sister and not find out about it until tomorrow? So tonight is going to be an exploration of the sources and the origins of some of the most incredible teachings about this story. And I think that when we have finished viewing and understanding and appreciating the bigger picture, then we will have a newfound appreciation for how that's possible. And you'll learn lots of other things while we're at it. Okay, we good to go? Good, so let's start at the beginning. At the beginning, Yaakov meets Rachel, and in a crass fashion, we could say it's love at first sight. Yaakov is very taken by his cousin, his younger cousin, and Lavan is not so taken by his nephew. In fact, he's not impressed with him at all. He's a total schlepper. He came here without two wooden nickels to rub together. He says, but you are family, and I suppose you can be of help. So I'll take you in for a little while. And he takes him in, and he strikes a deal. And the deal is that he's going to profit off his own daughters. And the Torah says, in introducing us to Rachel and Leah, Chapter 29, verse 16, Ulelavan shtei vanes. Lavan has two daughters. Shem hagdoyla Leah, the eldest daughter is Leah. V'shem haktana Rachel. So far, all we know about Rachel and Leah is that there is an older one and a younger one. And we know they have names. The Torah goes on to tell you, V'einei Leah rakois, the eyes of Leah were tender. The Rachel hoise yifas toyar, the yifas mara. Rachel was an exceedingly beautiful and attractive woman. Now, it is unusual for the Torah to speak about anybody in negative terms, especially when it's not necessary. In fact, the Torah famously uses additional verbiage, even though it's sparing on a letter, to say habehema asher einenu tahira, the animal who is not pure, instead of saying habehema hatmeya, because we want to use what's called lashon naki, clean language. And here, the Torah seems to disparage our mother Leah. She sounds like an ugly girl. So we take a look in Rashi. Rashi says, Ve'eini Leah rakois, the eyes of Leah were tender. This is not a natural thing. Because she thought that she would likely end up marrying Esav. It was very common to marry first cousins in those days. Remember, Avraham Avinu married his relative. Yitzchak married his first cousin. And so it was only natural that Esav and Yaakov would marry their first cousins. And in fact, Yaakov does marry his first cousins. But Esav is the elder, and Rachel is the younger one. So the assumption that everybody said was that Leah would marry Esav, ubachsa, and she would weep about this. Shahayu hakoil eminim shnei banim l'rivka, shnei banis l'lavan. Rivka has two sons, Lavan has two daughters. It's a shidduch, match made in heaven. Hagadela l'gadil, haktana l'katan. Esau was only a matter of a few minutes older. And you make the assumption that Leah was much older than Rachel, right?
No, but why would you assume that?
So I'm going to tell you. Yeah. Well, you see, clearly the Torah makes a big deal out of who was the firstborn and who wasn't. Right? That's like a big chunk of the narrative of last week's Parsha, of Yaakov being not the firstborn. He was supposed to be the firstborn, but Esav was the firstborn, but Esav didn't care about his firstbornship, and Yaakov ends up buying it, and then Yaakov has to masquerade as somebody else in order to get the blessings when he was just a few minutes younger. So clearly that's a big deal. Now, the Tosfos HaSholem says, Shnei Bonos, Shaveis B'Tzidkon, equally righteous. So Rachel and Leah are very different people, but equally righteous. The fact that it says Shtei Bonos seems to make some kind of equality between them. In fact, Rebbe Lazar Rekeach emphasizes that the fact that it says Shtei Bonos tells us that they were Shaveis, that they were equal. And in fact, it says whenever it says Shnei, it means Shavim. And an example that he gives is on Yom Kippur, when there was a special offering with the Sar Lazazel, that the two goats had to be identical. So if the Torah introduces you to two sisters and tells you Shtei, says the Rekeach, the chances are they were very similar. Not only are the chances that they were very similar, but in fact, it's brought down in more than one place that Rachel and Leah were actually twins. So much so, and I'll give you the quote. In the Sefer HaYashar, which is a very ancient Sefer with an incredible history behind it that supposedly goes back to the second base of Migdash. According to others, it's a Sefer that was offered by Rashi, maybe two Sefer HaYashars even. At any rate, over there it says, Vatahar Vateled Shtei Bonos Teumos, that the wife of Lavan, who incidentally was named Adina, she got pregnant once, and she had children once. And those two children were Rachel and Leah. Vayikra Lavan Shmeis ben Esav. Lavan called the names of his daughters, Shem HaBechoira Leah, V'Shem HaKtana Rachel. So it's also brought down that Adina, who was the wife of Lavan, had difficulty conceiving. So it's a family thing. Rivka had difficulty conceiving, and Adina had family difficulty conceiving. And ultimately, she had a set of maternal twins, which means one egg that was fertilized, she achieved a pregnancy once, and that egg divided, which means they were identical twins. Now, in the words of the Seder Olam Rabba, it says, Rachel v'Leia nasu b'nois esrim v'shtayim. Rachel v'Leia got married when they were age 22. Now, if they both got married a week apart, clearly they had to be twins. So we have twin girls who, for all we know, are identical. And so the Torah identifies Leah by her eyes. The Torah says that Einei Leah are rakos, the eyes of Leah are soft. Rachel was entirely beautiful. So with regard to this business of the soft eyes, lest you think that means that Mother Leah was ugly, chas v'shalom, or that that's what the Torah is saying, you take a look at the Das Zakenim and the Bali HaTosfos, and the Bali HaTosfos say that the word rakos is lashon rach v'toiv, soft and good, which means shehoisa niris yofa, that she was very beautiful, that she had very delicate eyes, very beautiful eyes. Veniris raka v'yalda, she looked very, very, she had a very youthful look about her. Avol rachos haisu mishubachas b'yofia, but Rachel was the more beautiful of the two. So you had identical twins, and you had one that was more striking. Rachel was more striking, and Leah was less striking, but she was a very beautiful woman. She had very beautiful eyes. And the reason that she had eyes that were more tender was not by birth, but rather because of her situation, because she was crying about her situation. She felt miserable about the notion that people thought she would end up bechelkoi shel Esav. It's interesting to note that according to Rabbi Yosef Bechor Shor, he says the reason that we emphasize the concept of Leah's eyes being soft, because she used to cry so much, he says that helps us understand why it was that Rachel was sent with the sheep instead of Leah, because Leah couldn't deal with the sunlight. They didn't invent sunglasses yet. And she had very tender eyes because she was a weepy girl. But Rachel had no problem handling the sun, so she ended up getting sent with the sheep. Okay, so the first thing we now know about the story is that Rachel and Leah are identical twins. Now, I gave a class about this in the past, and I'm not going to repeat it, but in a word, Yaakov and Esav were very odd kind of twins. You usually have, there are two kinds of twins. There are maternal twins and fraternal twins. Maternal twins, is when there's an egg that's fertilized and the egg divides. That's very common. From this comes identical twins who have basically the same DNA. And they share all kinds of, like, you know, even like subconsciousness. There's a very powerful connection between the two. Fraternal twins are two pregnancies that are achieved at once or even sometimes days apart. Fraternal twins are no more alike than any brother and sister. Their embryo or the egg comes from the same mother, the sperm comes from the same father, but they are, in fact, two different people. They just happen to share a womb together. Now, the problem with this story is that neither fits the image of Yaakov and Esav. If Yaakov and Esav were identical twins, well, that doesn't fit with the narrative. Esav, Yaakov comes out looking one way, and Esav comes out looking a very different way. But on the other hand, they seem to sound exactly the same. And the only way that our father, Isaac, became confused was because not of the voice, but the syntax employed by Yaakov when he spoke respectfully and politely, whereas Esav was a gruff fellow. Really, voice recognition is a very powerful thing. In fact, sometimes more powerful even than visual. You can conceal the visual, you can dress up like somebody, you cannot change your voice. And yet, Yitzchak, who's blind, who must have become much more in tune with things like voice recognition, was still not sure if it was Yaakov or Esav. So there's an identical nature between the two. They sound exactly the same, they look very different. How is this possible? Well, it is possible. There is this concept in medicine, although it's never actually been proven, but it's supposed that it has to be, that you could have a set of maternal twins where the egg divides prior to fertilization. This has never actually been observed. We've never actually seen it. However, there was a story a couple of years ago about a German woman married to a Ghanaian man who had twins, identical twins. One was black and one was white. Now, the only way that could happen, since they're identical, but they have different skin color, the only way that could happen is if the egg divided prior to fertilization. So they would actually be identical, and yet they would have totally different appearances. Anyway, this is my supposition that Yaakov and Esav were identical twins, meaning they are from the same embryo that divided. However, at the same time, they were very different. So Rachel and Leah don't have anything like that. We don't know that they're very different. All we know is that her eyes looks different, and not because of her nature, because she was crying, because she was going to end up in a lot of Esav. So first of all, having identical twins playing as actors here help us understand the story a little bit better. Now, here's the little problem. People can't keep secrets. You know, like those surprise parties, they never end up being a surprise. Somebody blurts out something at some point somewhere. And that's why the older I got, the harder time I had with the story. Like, how is that possible? Somebody had to say something. Yaakov didn't have any friends? Did nobody care about him? Nobody figured out what was going on here? How did Lavan manage to fool everybody? So this brings us to the next very interesting thing, and what I'm going to tell you is it's found in the Medrash Rabbah, it's also found in the Yalkut Shimoni. And basically, Lavan, who's called Lavan Ha'arami, Lavan, the swindler, swindled everybody. This was a really wacky wedding. You see, he actually got the people to pay for the wedding. This is what the Medrash says. The Medrash says, Lavan called a convocation together of the people. And he said to all of his kinsmen, he said, we're in trouble. Vayasef Lavan is called Anshe Hamokom Vayas Mishta. The Torah says, this is chapter 29, verse 22, Lavan gathers all the people together and he makes a party. Now, usually you arrange a party, then the guests come. Here it says, first he arranged all the guests, then he made the party. So the Medrash explains, Kines kol Anshe Mekoyme. He gathered all the people together and he says, Yodimatem, you know, we were having a really hard time, a scarcity of water, until this fellow Jacob, this nephew of mine, came. Kivan Shabbat Tzaddik, this righteous guy came, and this Baruch Hu Amayim, all of a sudden, our land has been blessed. They said, yep, that's kind of true. We'll agree with that. So what do you want us to do about it? He's out of here. I mean, he agreed to be here for 7 years, and that's all. So, and here we have two versions of the Medrash. According to one Medrash, Lavan craftily suggested to the people, so maybe you think we should fool him and sell him the older sister. And I know he loves Rachel, so he'll stay anyway for another 7 years. And that way we buy another 7 years of prosperity. Or according to another version, he actually uses the power of suggestion to get them to suggest it to him, which is so Levanian, right? Why shouldn't they suggest it? Why shouldn't they come up with the idea? And then Lavan's like, I didn't do anything. It was the people's idea. We had no choice. I can't have a rebellion on my hands. So at any rate, the people are, they're all in. Whether he had the idea, I mean, it was Lavan's idea anyway, but whether he made them think it was his idea or not is irrelevant, because at some point they all agreed this would be a great way to ensure prosperity. Obviously, the people of Haran were not known for extraordinary morality and decency. So he says, okay, how do I know you're going to keep your word? How do I know nobody is going to kind of spill the beans? So Lavan said, I'm not doing this. I'm not going to put myself in this kind of situation. You all have to put up. You all have to give me a mashkon, a deposit that you lose. You know, like when you check into the hotel and they take your $200 deposit in case you do something? They don't come to charge you after. They take your deposit before you start. Lavan says, I'm taking a deposit from everybody. After you make a deposit, if in fact you'll keep the secret, then we'll give you back a deposit. So now Lavan has everybody, so to speak, by the pocketbook. What did they bring? They didn't have cash. So it says, Aisi Alayon, they brought chamar, meshach, koifer. They brought oil, they brought bread, they brought wine. And the commander says, you know why he was called Lavan Harami? Sharima Banshe Mekoimai. Because he swindled everybody. Because afterwards, everybody came back for their food, and that was the food Lavan used for the wedding. So he got them to pay for their own wedding. He sold his daughter and got somebody to work for 7 years. Then he got the guests to pay for the wedding. So he didn't pay for the wedding either. This is a class act. So now here's something else which is helpful. It says that Lavan makes a great big feast. Let's go to the pasuk, the verse in the Torah that actually describes the wedding. Chapter 29, verse 22. We just mentioned this verse. It says, "Vayasef Lavan es kol anshe amokim, gathers them all together, vayas mishte." He makes a party. Where is the word mishte? Where did you hear the word mishte often? Gilas Esther, exact. It's called also mishte or mishte hayoyin, which means a drinking party. It was a drinking party. Well, the Toldos Yitzchok says like this. He says, "Leika Avram." This was not the way Avram fed his guests. Shenasal lehem lechel, that he gave them food to eat. V'lei keloit, who was really a lapsed, kind of a lost Jew, but he still remembered to be kind, that says v'yas lehem mishte, Lavan already was assimilated into a different culture. He did break out the booze, but also it says matzos afa v'yechelu. They had a booze party, but there was some matzah. They still ate a little bit. No, not this. Toldos Yitzchok says, not here. Over here, we had v'yas mishte. There was just a party. Shekvi asay, asa al hayoyin. This was all about drinking. Everybody was getting drunk tonight. There was no meal. There was a drinking fest. Okay, so now we know, number one, that the two sisters are identical twins. The only identifying mark between them is their eyes, but she's wearing a veil because Jewish brides wear a veil because clearly Rivka knew something when she veiled herself, so that must have been the Jewish way to get married or the custom of the time to get married that way. So the bride comes veiled, okay? Bride comes veiled. The people are all in on the secret because everybody wants Yaakov to stay in town. He's a blessing. He's a good luck charm. They're also really, really happy. They're all, this is like a drinking party. So everybody's high. Everybody's is flying. And then it says, what happens? Vayiba erev, he waits till evening. Vayikach es Leah bitay, and then he takes Leah, his daughter. Vayavay oisa elav, he brings Leah to him. Vayavay Leah, and then Yaakov is with her. So this business of vayiba erev, says the Tosfos HaSholem, this is all part of the trick. Bishvil l'ramoisay, this is in order to fool him. So in order to fool him, he waited until it got dark. Now, Yaakov, of course, why didn't he turn the lights on? Lavan was very smart. As the Yalkut Ruveni tells us, this wedding took place be Erev Shabbat, Bachnasas Kala, Hoya Mishta Lavan, just on Friday evening. So just as Shabbat is arriving, that's when the Kala came, like Lechadodi. So the Kala came in the evening. The bride came just in the evening. If she came in the evening, so how was Yaakov going to turn the lights on? Lavan's not Jewish. Lavan can do whatever he wants. Yaakov's keeping Shabbos. Yaakov's not playing around with the lights. So basically now, Yaakov is totally at Lavan and all the other people's mercy. Incidentally, the Agud Ravani points out that the word Mishte has the same numeric equivalent of the words Shabbat Gadol. So this was a great big Shabbat scheme. It was all about Shabbat. Lavan planned this for Shabbat. He knew that Yaakov will be powerless, not be able to strike a match. He knew he's not going to be able to figure out what's going on. And in all of this, in the midst of all this, that's what Lavan brings, Leah. Now, surfacially, with a veil, Leah must have looked exactly the way Rachel looked. And it would seem she might even have sounded similar. It would seem that way, right? Because if Yitzchak couldn't tell apart the voices of Yaakov and Esav, so it's very possible that she couldn't tell apart the voices of Rachel and Leah. Now, here's the little problem. The problem is that Rachel had anticipated all of this, and we have two different sets of midrashim, which talk about signs. Talk about signs that Rachel knew her father Lavan would try to play a trick like this. So what were the signs? We take a look in the Bali HaTosfos. Bali HaTosfos says something very interesting. The Daas HaKeinim says, Shleisha simanim masra la. There were three signs that were given over to Rachel. What were the three signs? The mitzvahs, the Jewish woman, are especially responsible for. The mitzvah of Nida, family purity, challah, kashrus in the house, and hadlakas haner, Shabbat candles and Yom Tov candles. These are the three mitzvahs. And Yaakov gave this to Rachel. The Bali HaTosfos maintained that the source for this is in Masechet Megillah, page 13, as well as in Masechet Bava Basra on page 123. So now let's go back to the Medrash. How did Lavan keep Yaakov occupied a whole day? He's got an anxious chosen. He wants to see the kala. So they figured out how to keep him occupied. So a whole day, all day they were sitting and praising Yaakov. And they were singing songs about how great the chosen is. It's getting in the evening. Yaakov goes, all right, this is getting crazy already. Can we go home to wedding? Why are you doing this? So they said to him, Amr and Leh, they said, At gemalt chesed b'schusach. You did much kindness and for us. And therefore, they continue to praise him and continue to surround him. Now, remember, everybody's in on this joke. Everybody except Yaakov Avinu. He has no clue what's going on. And to begin with, he is capable of being shrewd, but it's not his natural instinct. He's not Mr. Shrewd. In fact, he's Tom, Yosheva Halim. He's a simple guy. He's a straight shooter. So usually, figure, he's coming to his wedding. He's going to be a straight shooter. And anyway, he took care of things. He gave Rachel simanim. So this can't go wrong. And now, something very interesting happens. So Mikalsin Kadomoi, they were dancing in front of him and praising him. The Amrin, they were saying, Halia, Halia, Halia. What's Halia? Halia was he Leah. She's Leah. So later, when Lavan came and he said, Yaakov said, what'd you do to me? Lavan said, oh, come on, you knew. There was the song. The whole night they're singing Hilea. You didn't get that? Now, I always heard that in the Sephardic community, especially the Moroccan community, they do at a simcha, they go, la, 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 la. Yeah. I always heard that it's connected to this. So I actually called a friend of mine this evening who's one of the Sephardic rabbis in town. I said, could you find out for me if there's any truth to this? So I said, okay, I have somebody to call. He knows very good the Sephardic Minhagim, all the sources. I called him back. I was walking over. I said, no, what's the answer? He says, I couldn't get through to him, but I always heard it. And my wife says she always heard it too. He says, you won't sound crazy if you say this. So in fact, it could be that the la 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 that the Sephardic Jews have at a chuppah is all the way from the wedding of Yaakov and Leah. Now, what I found really interesting is that in our medrash it says, Halia, Halia, Halia. And when you look in the Yalkut Shimoni, it says it differently. It says, Hilea, Hilea, Hilea. And then there's a third version. So we have three versions of exactly what kind of funny songs they were singing. But we have to think about this. Yaakov is in a strange place. He doesn't know the culture. He doesn't understand the people. He's never been to a wedding before. Yaakov is a busy man. He was an honest person. He was working. He only got to work. He didn't go to weddings. He didn't go to parties. He comes to this wedding. Everybody is shikir out of their heads. The whole, hundreds of drunken people dancing around him, praising him, making crazy sounds. The bride is veiled. He barely gets to see her. whatever secret signs he has, he exchanges secret signs, and he has no clue what's going on. And then to boot, if that's not good enough, he makes sure to turn the lights off. All the lights go out. Yaakov says, what's going on over here? And they say to him, what? This is modesty. It's modesty. You're getting married. But we don't have well lit. The marriage is not well lit. So Yaakov is in this dimly lit area. He can't see the bride. He's surrounded by a certain environment. And remember, they're identical. So they probably look the same. And Yaakov actually has no clue what's going on. Well, of course, here is the biggest problem of the story. It all sounds good up until this point. But at some point, the guests go home and the bride and groom go home. And how is it possible that Yaakov doesn't know who he's marrying, who he's consummating the marriage with? So for this, I'm going to take you to a medrash, which is found in Megillas Eicha, actually. And the Eicha Rabbah says like this. In the Psichta of Eicha Rabasi, it says that at the time of the Churban Beis HaMikdash, when the Jewish people were being led, chained, broken, beaten, naked, in the direction of Bavel. It says that the Avot, the holy Avot, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Leah, and Moshe Rabbeinu, all came Levakesh Rachim Al Yisrael. Now this medrash lines up with another medrash that's found in Yirmiyo, where Hashem tells Yirmiyo, go and tell the Avos and Moshe. So the Medrash asks, Yirmiyo said, like, how do we know where Moshe? Everybody knows, nobody knows where Moshe is buried. How is Yirmiyo supposed to go there? So there's two versions. One version is he went to the edge of the Jordan River and he screamed out, Ben Amram, Ben Amram. There's another version that Moshe and Zipporah were miraculously transposed into Maaret HaMachpelah. At any rate, the bottom line is he came to the grave of the Avot. The Medrash says Yirmiyo didn't want to go. He was afraid to go. And so why are you afraid to go? He says, because they will say to me, this happened under your watch. This happened in your generation. But he does go there. And he goes there and he cries. And they come before Hashem, the Kisei HaKavod, the throne of glory. And they ask for mercy. And God's mercy is not awakened, not aroused. And then what happens? Then they're actually marching by the Ohel of Leah, because Rachel, because Rachel Imenu is buried al Eim HaDerech. She's buried on Derech Hevron, which was one of the world's oldest highways, until the Fakistinians made a ruckus and forced us to close the highway down for the first time in 4,000 years. It's one of the oldest highways. People have always traveled the highway. Rachel Imenu was literally buried on a highway. So the people were being led on the highway, and they cried out to Rachel. And because they cried out to Rachel, this is incidentally very clear and a vivid Torah proof about going to the grave of a tzaddik. You have to actually go there to daven. So they cried out to Rachel, and Rachel came, and she was Mevake al Banel. And she asked for mercy. And the Medrash says like this, Rabbeinu Shalalem, you know that Yaakov worked for me with incredible love for 7 years. You know that I waited these 7 years, and the time came for my marriage. You know that my father plotted to switch me with my sister Leah. When I found out what my father was planning, this is very painful for me. And I went to Yaakov and I told him. And here it says, Umasarti lo simanim. I gave him signs. Not Yaakov gave Rachel, but Rachel gave Yaakov. We'll talk about that in a minute. So we should be able to identify Beini or Bein Achoti, to make a difference to me and my sister. Again, this is a clear giveaway. They were identical twins. Why would you need signs? If they weren't identical, why would you need signs? How could you mix them up? Kedei shelo yuchal avi lahachlifeni. He shouldn't be able to switch us around. So Rachel Imenu actually was not prepared to go through with this. She wanted to stop it. And then, ule'achar mikein nischaratati. After I regretted this. V'kovashti es tavasi. I withheld my own passion. I had mercy on my sister, that she should not experience unimaginable shame. In the last moment, on the night of the wedding, when my father did this to me and switched me over, made her the bride, Masarti la'achosi kol ha'simonim. I gave her all the signs I had given to my husband, so that Yaakov should think shehi Rachel. Now listen what the psichta says. V'loy oid, ela shenichnasti tachat hamita. I went into the bedroom. I was under the bed. And when he was with my sister, it was a ventriloquist act. I was talking. That's crazy stuff, huh? And she was quiet. She was quiet. Va'ani meshivale, I called davar v'davar. I responded on her behalf. Why? Kidei shaloi yakir koila chaisi. So that he might not recognize, he shouldn't recognize the voice of my sister. So maybe they didn't sound so identical. Or maybe it wasn't exactly identical. Or maybe Yaakov would be able to pick it apart and she wasn't taking a chance. Kol kach gamalti chesedima. This is how kind I was to her. I didn't have any jealousy. I didn't shame her. And so Rachel finished her words before Hashem. She says, I am just a human being. I need basar v'dam. Ofer v'efer. I am dust. I am ashes. I didn't have jealousy to somebody who went in, zugezunt, and took my stead. Va'ata melech chai v'kayim v'rachman, you, the living king, the merciful king, mipnei maki nesa. La'vedes kechav m'shem be'em mamash. Because the Jewish people were consorting with idols who have no value? Really? V'higlesi bona, you have now exiled my children. V'nergu b'cherev, and they have been slaughtered by the thousands, I should add, the Gemara tells us, by sword. V'asu oivim bam kiritzoinim, and their enemies do as they please. When Rachel Imenu offers this prayer, nizgagulu rachmav shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, b'shvilech Rachel, ani machzer es Yisraelim kaiman. For you, I will return the Jewish people to their land. And this is the idea of Rachel Mavaka al Baneha. This is the Kolbet Amanishma. This is the beautiful prophecies of Yirmiyahu, where he speaks about the concept of the promise of Shavu Banim Ligvulich. So now we know how this happened. Basically, Rachel was a full culprit here. She was fully involved in this deception. And only in the last minute she changed her mind. She actually had no intention of going along with this. And she knew that once the whistle got blown, the whistle would be blown. Now here it says that she gave the signs, and like the Balei HaTosfos just said, quoting the Gemara, the three mitzvahs. Yaakov would say to her, what's the sign? And what did she have to respond? Nidachala hadlokas aner. Say back the mitzvahs. However, it's brought down in a number of places, including the Chida, who brings it in the name of his grandfather, the Baal Chesed Lavram, and the Yalkut Reveni also quotes this, that the sign was Tnuch Oizen Ubayan Yad Viregel, the inner cartilage of the ear, the right thumb and the right toe. So that was like a sign. So now we have an obvious question. Which is the signs? Obviously, it works perfectly. There was Yaakov's signs and there was Rachel's signs. So Yaakov's signs were, you'll tell me, chala, nida chala, hadlokas aner. And Rachel's sign was back, you'll know it's me when I touch your big toe, your right thumb, and the cartilage of your ear. So we had signs, and Leah knew the signs now. So Leah came in. Okay, so it's pitch black, because there's no lights. Yaakov can't turn the lights on because it's Shabbos. Lavan made sure to take care of that. She knows the signs. They kind of look the same. You can't see if there's different eyes or not because it's dark. And Rachel's in the room. And Rachel's impersonating her sister. And this is why we read, Vayiva Boiker, and then it came morning, Vehinehi Leah. How did you turn into Leah? You were Rachel last night. So obviously, until the sun rose, until there was natural light, he didn't know who he married. Vayemer Lavan, Maza is a Sicily, what did you do? I worked with Rachel Lomarim Yisani. So here it gets really interesting. The Medrash says that Yaakov Avinu saw this in the morning. The Torah says he yelled at Lavan. But first, Torah doesn't tell us he was upset with Leah. Omar La, he said to her, Ma Rimyasa Basra Ma. What a swindler you are, the daughter of a swindler. Lav Bilelia Hava Karina Rachel? Did I not call you Rachel at night? Va'at on Yisli, and you said, yeah. And now all of a sudden you're Leah? So Leah says back to him, Amar Alei, is Safar Dlesli Talmidim? Have you ever find an author who doesn't have disciples? She says, Lei Kachal Yetzavach Lachavuch, was your father not calling out Esav? Va'at on Alei, and you said, yeah, I? And then he went to Lavan. And then he went to Lavan. And he screamed at Lavan. And what did Lavan tell him? I said, oh, well, you have to understand, Yaakov, he said, Loi kach eisim bim kaimenu. This is not the way we do it over here. Loi ken yasa bim kaimenu. Losses hatsi'idol of ne'a bechiram. Which, the Mefarshim say, was also a bit of a touche back to him. He says, we don't do like you did, where the firstborn became the second, and the secondborn became the first. No, no. Over here, we follow the etiquette. Over here, the firstborn is the firstborn, and the secondborn is the firstborn, the secondborn. Which this is, it's a little bit harsh. It sounds, this really has to be better understood. What did Leah just say? You're a ganef, so I'm a ganef. So, before we move on, there's many, many more details, but I want to share the following insight with you. Was Esav doomed to be a wicked person? Was he doomed to be wicked? Certainly sounds like it. Mother's pregnant. They go by a shul, and Yaakov gets excited. They go by a house of idolatry or ill repute, and Esav gets excited, whatever that means. But it seems like Esav is doomed. So if he's doomed, he's not a bad person. If he was predetermined to be wicked, how could you blame him? If he didn't choose to be wicked, he's not wicked. They're no bad dogs. They're bad owners. They don't watch the dog. That's what Dobermans do. They're dogs. They're not bad. The owner didn't watch it as bad. So righteousness is always the byproduct of freedom of choice. So the Rebbe explains that Esav was not doomed to be wicked, but Esav had a very different path to follow. You see, the Rambam talks in Shmei Neprokim about two possibilities, two ways of serving Hashem. He says there's hachassid hama'ula, the perfect chassid, the pious, maybe in English, goody two-shoes. You know, the kid who brings the apple to the teacher, does everything right. And then he says there's another kind of Ovid Hashem. He's called hamizgaber al yitzrei, the one who overpowers his or her yitzhahara. So people who have a big, bad, evil inclination, and they really have to wrestle and struggle. Yaakov was chassid hama'ula, the perfect chassid. He was almost predestined for holiness, for righteousness. Sure, Yaakov had to work with himself, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Yaakov's efforts are in a different direction, the opposite of what Esav had to work on. Remember, Yaakov and Esav were an embryo that divided, right? They're like mirror images, the polar opposite. Esav's avoda, Esav's work was to become a refined individual. Yaakov's avoda was to go out of his shell, not to be such a goody two-shoes, and to be ready to take risks and do what is necessary in order to serve Hashem. Now, Yitzchak, he bet on Esav. He believed he could get through to Esav. Rivka was wiser. She bet on Yaakov. They knew one of these boys is going to have to become, ultimately, the progenitor of the future Jewish people. You can't have two Jewish peoples. You can't have B'nai Esav and B'nai Yaakov. It's going to be one or the other. Yitzchak was convinced he'd get through to Esav. He knew Esav wasn't behaving nicely. He knew Esav had some issues to deal with, but he still believed he would get through to him. And he believed by empowering him, he would be able to turn him around. And he figured, Yaakov doesn't have what it takes. He's too nice. He will never survive in the real world. What happens is that Rivka, ultimately, through her pushing and cajoling, she makes Yaakov grow into Yaakov. She turns Yaakov into the charlatan, master of deception, which is whose art? Esav's. That's Esav's. Because Esav, he's like the Chazar, the Medrash says. He's always showing you his cloven hooves. Look how kosher I am. But actually he wasn't. He got married at 40 after being a rapist for 30 years before. But he made believe that he was a big tzaddik. Esav was a master of deception. It turns out that Yaakov has to become half an Esav. And only when he becomes like Esav, that's when he gets the blessings. And of course, when Yitzchak hears that all of his efforts of decades has just gone down the drain, he doesn't express a moment of anger or remorse. What does he say right away? Gam baruch yeh. Yes. Yes, she was right. My wife was right all along. I should have known she was right. Yaakov can do it. Yaakov did it. Now really, in a sense, what happened is that Yaakov had to be Yaakov and Esav, because Esav didn't pony up. And because of Esav didn't do his job, Yaakov now has to do the job of Yaakov and the job of Esav. Truth be told, Leah had incredible powers, as we're going to see in a moment. Leah had the ability to turn Esav around. And therefore, it was natural to think that Leah was going to marry Esav and Rachel was going to marry Yaakov. But Leah knew that that couldn't happen. Leah knew that Esav was far gone, too late. Nobody can turn him around. In fact, even when he married Basmas, Bas Yishmael, which should have been a good thing, he didn't divorce his wicked wives. He added a wife to his harem. He didn't divorce, right? He just used that as a springboard for wickedness. So what did Leah know now? Leah knew that she'll never marry Esav. Who is she going to marry? She's going to have to marry Yaakov, who's also Esav. You see, Yaakov basically becomes two people. He takes the place of Yaakov and Esav. So Leah says to him, when you need to take the place of Esav, you masqueraded as Esav, right? Your father said, Esav? And you said, yeah, I. Esav is your firstborn. You needed to do that to get your blessings. So Leah said back to him, I need to do that to get my blessings. He said, I just listened to my mother. She said, I listened to my father. In other words, ultimately, Leah knew that the only way she'd be able to make this happen was to go along with the deception. And what she says to Yaakov is, not just stick it to you, ha, gotcha. I'm like, did she really think that was going to make for a good marriage? Like, was that a smart thing to say? You lie, you cheat. I don't want to marry you. You're stuck with me now. And you did the same thing. Just to add it, like, it doesn't make any sense. But really what's happening here is that Leah is saying to Yaakov, she's reading him the riot act back. She says, you became like Esav too, and I needed to become what I needed to do, so that in the end, Yaakov is marrying Rachel and Leah, which in fact we'll discuss in a moment, is actually what happens. And Yaakov ultimately does play two roles. So the Rebbe says something very interesting about Leah's soft eyes, which were our original point of departure.
What's in the destiny that there should be two mothers of the Jewish people opposed to one?
Hang on to that thought. I'm going to get to that in a second. So the Rebbe asked a famous question. Famous question, why would you speak badly about Leah? She was ugly. Okay, we have the Baal HaTosfos, Das Kenim says that she was rach v'toyv, but most of the opinions that she didn't look good, like, you know, her eyes were too soft. So the Rebbe said, on a spiritual level, what we're really being told about is two different kinds of spirits. So Rachel and Leah may have looked very much alike, but they were in fact very different kinds of people. When we say Rachel was Yifas Toyer v'Yifas Mara, that Rachel was of a beautiful form and a beautiful appearance, what are we just talking about? Skin deep beauty? Is that what Judaism is about? You know, there's a beautiful teaching. It says, Sheker Achein Vehevela Yefi. Shlomo HaMelech says, beauty is meaningless. It's meaningless. Isha Yiras Hashem, Itas Halal. A woman that is God-fearing, has the right values in life, that's praiseworthy. Yeah, but the Gemara says, Ein Isha El Yefi. The Gemara says that beauty is an attribute. It's a feminine attribute. So how could the Gemara dismiss it? So the Vilna Gaon has a Gevaldika Taich. He says, Sheket Hachein Vehevela Yefi. If all it is skin deep beauty, if all it is charisma, it's worthless. But if it's Isha Yiras Hashem, if the physical beauty comes along with the beauty of character, He Tisalo, then that whole package, that's praiseworthy. Beauty of body, beauty of spirit. Beauty of character, beauty of appearance. So when the Torah talks to us about the Imois, HaKadoshis, the holy Imois, and to talk about the contours of the body, how beautiful they were. They were hot to trot. I mean, really? Why is that important to know? What difference does it make for us now, 4,000 years later, if our matriarchs were beautiful or not? But really, there is a very profound message. The profound message is that their beauty was so intense, it radiated from the spirit straight through to the outside. Beauty through and through is what we call. So when we say Rachel's Yifas Torah, Yifas Mara on a spiritual level, which all of Torah is understood both literally and spiritually, it means that Rachel represented perfection. What does it mean? She was of a perfect build. She had all the mitzvahs. She did everything right. Rachel was a perfect tzidkanit. This Avodah is called Avodat HaTzadikim. And then we had Leah. And Leah's Leah Eini Leah Rakos. Her eyes are soft. What kind of avoda is that? That's avodat tshuva. That's the avoda of tshuva. Like the Or HaChaim says on the pasuk that says ubachta et avia ve'et ima yerech yamim in Parshas Kisetzi LaMochama. We speak about the maiden of beautiful form, and the Or HaChaim explains that entire narrative in the Chumash as a discussion of the soul, that the soul is like a captive. It's like lured into this world, and the soul was promised all kinds of amazing things, and then the soul comes there and says, where's all those amazing things? It's not what you promised me. You say, oh, it is, but first you have to get through life. That's what mitzvahs are. That's really what this is about. So it says the first thing is ubachta et avia vet ima yerech yamim. She weeps for a father and mother, which is a euphemism for her spiritual origin, for a whole month. And what does it say about that? The Baal HaTurim says this is the month of Elul, because we always read the parsha of Kisetzi, the beginning of the month of Elul. So it says the month of Elul is the month of tears. What is Elul? What do we do in Elul? Tshuva, slichot and tshuva. So this is the avoda of tshuva. So Leah, who had weepy eyes, what was Leah's avoda? Tshuva. And this actually we see in the children of Rachel and Binyamin. Rachel and Leah, pardon me. Yosef and Binyamin are called in the Gemara pure tzaddikim. Yosef is called tzaddik elyon, and Binyamin is called tzaddik tachton. Supernal tzaddik, higher tzaddik, lower tzaddik, they're called tzaddikim. However, when we talk about the children of Leah, we see that Reuven has a virtue. It says, Pasach b'tshuva tchila. He was the world's first real Baal Tshuva. And then it says, Yehuda was a Baal Tshuva on steroids, even more so than Reuven. As the Rebbe once explained, because from Reuven's tshuva, what happened? Yosef got thrown in a pit. He went to cry, and somebody else got hurt. But from Yehuda's tshuva, and his owning up to his acts, he saves the lives of Tamar and her children. So a tshuva that makes a difference for somebody is a much more profound tshuva that's just tshuva for yourself. But ultimately, both Reuven and Yehuda, which is the firstborn, and then the progenitor of royalty, of monarchy for the Jewish people, who are Leah's children, they excel in which avoda? The avoda of Baalei Tshuva.
Now,
well, the idea of tshuva is a yearning to escape your present situation. Leah's weeping is paradigmatic of tshuva, because Leah didn't want to end up with Esav. So therefore, everybody said, Rachel is a perfect tzaddik, a goody two-shoes. She has every T crossed, every I dotted. She's perfect. She'll pick this picture of perfection. Belongs with Yaakov, who is Tamim. He's perfect. Ishtam. And she's perfect. So too, Mrs. Perfect and Mr. Perfect, a great shidduch. Leah has the powers of tshuva. She should be with the Midgaber al Yitzro potential, the one who could overcome his Yitzhara. And actually, we have a very, very sad commentary later on about Dina, that Dina, who was exactly like her mother, could have brought Esav around. And had Dina brought Esav around, Mashiach would have come. But Yaakov didn't want that. Yaakov had given up on his brother, and he was more worried about his daughter, and who could blame him? But this is like the issue that we'll discuss later in the next week's Parsha with Dina and the situation that is engendered as a result of that. Dina could have been betrothed to Esav. It was not uncommon for uncles to marry nieces. I know it sounds very strange today, but it was not an uncommon thing. Now, you asked a question. Somebody asked a question. Why do we need two mothers? Well, the answer is because we really need the virtue of Yaakov and Esav, but we couldn't get Esav. Esav is lost. Esav, the only way we got a little bit of Esav was through some of the converts, like Avadia, whose entire prophecy speaks about the destruction of Esav and Edom, like Uncleus, Achilles, the great Roman convert who wrote the preeminent interpretation of the Torah that Rashi bases almost all of his commentary on. Uncleus, that's from Rome, from Edom. Rabbi Meir, says Meir Eini Chachamim. He was way ahead of everybody else, was a convert, a descendant of Esav, and many other great people who came from the family of Esav. So that's the only way we got a little bit of Esav was through certain righteous people, righteous converts, who joined us. However, in and of himself, we didn't get the avoda of tshuva from Esav. So where are we going to get that from? That's where we have two mothers. We have Rachel and we have Leah. And Rachel and Leah together represent the idea of avodas hatzadikim and avodas habalei tshuva. And both are necessary. Both are important parts of our service to Hashem, or in the Rambam's words, hatzadik hachasid hama'ula or hamidgaber al yitzro. That ends up coming from Rachel and Leah. So really, without this whole story, this whole complicated story is a continuation. It's not that last week we happened to have Yaakov stealing blessings, and this week Yaakov happens to get ripped off and fooled and marrying the wrong sister. It's not exact. It's all a continuum. This is one continuum, and the bottom line of the continuum is that things don't go exactly as planned. This is like the story of life itself. It's jagged. It's imperfect. You're dealing with situations. You're reacting to realities. We had a situation where Yitzchak and Rivka had children. It was supposed to go a certain way. It didn't go that way. Guess what? Life doesn't go that way. You know, you read other scriptures. Everybody's perfect in them. Everybody's knights in shining armor. Everything goes exactly as it's supposed to go. In our scriptures, it never goes the way it's supposed to go. Everybody's always making mistakes. Everybody's always getting punished. Everything's always going wrong. You can think we weren't smart enough to write better scriptures? Because this is actually true. This is actually true. And real life isn't square or even round. Real life is jagged. And these are real stories. Real stories that we learn from. Ma'ase avot, siman lebanim. Ma'ase imaot, siman lebanot. This is our stories. So our stories in our own life, things don't always go exactly as you planned them to go. So what do? You give up? No, you bounce back. You dust yourself off and you figure out, how do we move forward? How do we deal with the next situation? So we have a situation where Yaakov and Esav, it doesn't go well with Yaakov and Esav. Okay. We got to deal with this. Well, Yaakov does what he has to do. And then the next parsha, now we're into the next parsha where Yaakov has to marry and build the Jewish people. We have almost a mirror image, the same story. Here we have the same two streams, which is Rachel and Leah. The difference is the woman nail it. They get it right. In the guy's instance, Yaakov gets it right. Esav is far gone. In the parallel, in the woman's story, the Imaot, Rachel and Leah both get it right. There's the Balas Tshuva and there's the Tzadeket. And together, they form the perfect picture. So essentially, Yaakov becomes almost like you could call him a dual personality. He's functioning on many levels. And that's what's necessary in order to build the Jewish people who are comprised of many levels. We're not homogeneous. In fact, the difference of Avodat HaTzadikim and Avodat HaBalei Tshuva is a major divide, if you will, or a major due dimensions, which is found within Am Yisrael, the nation of Israel. So now going back to the actual story, how did Lavan get away with telling that to Yaakov? And if indeed it was the custom, did Yaakov not know that it was the custom? So there is a medrash that says that Lavan got all the people together and he said, look, if we want to keep this prosperity going, we need to write a new law. We need to pass a new law. And the new law is going to be, it's prohibited for the older sister or younger sister to get married before the older sister. So he had the law passed. Now that he had the law passed, now we can go forward. But did Yaakov not know this? If it was a law passed, I mean, he wasn't clueless. So the thing is like this. The Rebbe once explained, Yaakov knew that everybody said Leah would go to Esav and he would marry Rachel. So Yaakov, as far as Yaakov was concerned, Leah was engaged already. She was spoken for. So the issue, there was no issue here. So he came to love her. She's spoken for. It's your problem. You're a father. Go find Esav. Go make the shidduch. What do you want from me? So what does he respond? What did Lavan says? Lavan says, Leah Yasa came bim kameinu. We don't do it that way. Spoken for is not good enough. We cannot give over the younger daughter in marriage, even if Leah was engaged, which she really wasn't, but even if she was, Rachel can't be given over in marriage. In other words, there's like a subtlety in the interpretation of the law. Yaakov would have interpreted the law one way, and Esav says, no, you have it all wrong. That's not the way we interpret the law. That the meaning of the law here is, Lasei satsi'ira lifnei habechira. Which then brings us into a very interesting conclusion of the Medrash. What did Lavan then say?
So Lavan was a ganav and a lawyer, too.
Yeah. Well, let me repeat that. Lavan was a ganav and a lawyer?
No.
Is there a difference? I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I couldn't pass up the lawyer joke. I can't make fun of lawyers. I consider being a lawyer myself. I can't make fun of lawyers. It's funny. There's a friend of mine, a good friend of mine, once, like, we're joking. I said, okay, if we're not going to be rabbis, what are we going to be? He said, okay, we're going to be lawyers. So he talked and became a lawyer. I mean, Lavan was a real shyster, like a serious operator. in which he would interpret the law to be able to get away with it. Understand? He didn't just break the law. This guy was clever. This guy was sly. This guy would work within the law to interpret the law and to abuse the law. That's the real sly guy. He convinced everybody else to do it. Like the power of suggestion. He didn't even come up with this. He says, "What is my idea? What do you want from me? I don't do this by myself," he says. He says, "Lo yasakim bimkoimenu." We don't do this. And then what is the next pasuk? Look in verse 27. Malei shavua zois. Let's finish this week. V'nitna lecha gam mezois. We'll give you. Who's will? We will? Who's the royal we? Who's we? I. No, all of a sudden it's we. Lovin says, "I'm not the guy. What do you want from me? I'm just a law-abiding citizen. I have to do what everybody does. I can't go against the local convention. They'll lynch me or something." So he doesn't even own up to his dishonesty. He blames his dishonesty on somebody else. He's a class act. A real, real ganef, like master of deception. So the Medrash finishes off, now that Lavan said this to him, Lavan said, "Oh, we don't do this over here." And so Yaakov gets served, so to speak, his own meal. Yemer Lavan, Leyasa came, "We don't do this." Malei shavua zois. What does it mean, Malei shavua zois? Says the Medrash, Omar Rabbi Yaakov bar Acha, Rabbi Yaakov bar Acha said, "Mikan sheim arvin simcha b'simcha." From here we learn, we cannot mix one simcha in another. Ela Malei shavua zois, finish the Sheva Brachas, finish the week of celebration, and then, etc. Now here's really interesting. So this is a Medrash. In the Rambam, in Hilchas Ishus, Laws of Matrimony, chapter 10, halacha 14, it says, "Afilu b'choyle shol moyed einois anashim." Chol HaMoed would be the perfect time to get married. Nobody's working. Everybody's come, the family gets together. It's a no-brainer. You have Yom Tov at the beginning, Yom Tov at the end, have a wedding in between. And everybody's looking for something to do on Chol HaMoed. No? Chol HaMoed is when everybody sits around in their Shabbos clothes and says, "What should we do today? A wedding would be a perfect thing." No, we can't do that. Why? Because if it's Sukkot, if that's the focus of your joy, then Sukkot is the focus, not a wedding. If it's Pesach, then it's Pesach. And that's not what the focus is. Malei shavua zois, how do we know this? Because it says here, Lavan said, finish this week, and then nitna lecha gam mezois. So all the Mefarshim ask, what in heaven is going on over here? We now have laws of how we have to get married because of what Lavan said? Lavan the thief? Loving the swindler, loving the master of deception, because he said something, we're bound by it. But it gets even in the stickier. The question is, how could we have any customs taken from the marriage of Yaakov? Vaharei kayim klal, there is a rule, and this rule is brought down in a number of places. Ein lemeidim mikoydim matan Torah. We cannot learn, we cannot derive halachas from before the Torah was given. Can't do that. It's a clear Gemara in Yerushalmi. It's brought down. The Tosfos bring it down, Meid Katan. Rambam brings it down in his commentary on Perek Yud Anasha in Masechet Chulin. So the idea, we don't learn from before Matan Torah. We're not down by before Matan Torah. We don't learn from before Matan Torah. So if we don't learn from before Matan Torah, how is it that the Rambam quotes a halacha with regard to marriage laws today from the laws of love and then? There's a Pirkei de Rebbe Lezer. In chapter 16 of Pirkei de Rebbe Lezer, which is the collection of Rebbe Lezer's midrashic teachings, Rebbe Lezer is a Rebbe of Rebbe Akiva. It says, "Minayin anu lemeidim shivas mi'am mishnah." Where do we learn Sheva Brachas? So the Pirkei de Rebbe Lezer says, "Mi Yaakov Avinu," from Father Jacob. Why? "Kishanasa es Leah." When he married Leah, "Asa shivas mi'am mishnah." He made 7 days of feasting and rejoicing. Shanema, how do we know? "Mala shavua zeis." He says, "We'll finish this Sheva Brachas, then we'll have another wedding next week." So the poskim say that this is really not a drosha gemura. Sometimes we lidrosh means to delve deeply into the verses and to extrapolate or to extract the halacha. So the mefarshim say this is not really a full drosha. Why? Because ein lemeidim milifnei matan Torah. We can't learn from before matan Torah. You cannot say that Sheva Brachas is binding because that's what happened once upon a time with Yaakov. That was before matan Torah. So the Rebbe asks, like, what's going on over there? Why are we even quoting this then? It should have no bearing whatsoever. What Lavan said to justify his behavior, that becomes the basis for how we get married? That's the basis that we form marriage etiquette on today? So the Rebbe says, Rebbe has a new approach. He suggests that the idea of Ein Lemeidim, Lufnei Matan Torah, is only with regard to halacha. Halacha means legalities, binding law. We cannot have binding law based on that. Why? Because nitna Torah, v'nischadsha halacha, like the Yom Bava Basra says, the Torah was given, the halacha was nitchadesh. That's when the law came into being. So therefore, yef shalumud mehalacha. We cannot learn a halacha, a law, from something it did before Matan Torah. However, the Rebbe suggests there's a difference between halacha and what's called birur hametziyut. Birur hametziyut means to have clarity about circumstances, to have an understanding, for example, about human nature. We could learn things from before Matan Torah because we have no source that says that human beings ceased to be human beings once the Torah was given and became something else afterwards. We were Homo sapiens before and Homo sapiens after. You want to say halacha changed? No problem. People didn't change. If people changed, how could we learn lessons from the stories of their life? People changed. People didn't change. In fact, you learn from the beginning of the Torah, people haven't changed one bit. Adam Marishan gets caught with his pants down, quite literally. What does he say?
It's her fault.
I didn't do it. People are still doing the same thing. Blames his wife. What does she say? Me? Hanocha Shisiani, the serpent. People don't take responsibility. They never took responsibility. So we're supposed to learn from those stories. They didn't take responsibility. That was bad. We should take responsibility. But people don't change. Human nature doesn't change. Human nature that's greedy, human nature that's capricious. God speaks to Cain after he kills his brother. He says, L'pesach chatos reivitz. Sin is always crouching at the door. The Gemara in Brachos tells us that that is an apt description of humanity. That Mishah, Shayad, Niner, Latzeis, the moment he's starting to be born, the Yetzirah is there right away. And people are selfish, and people are capricious, and people could even be mean. Some of the meanest people on the face of earth are little children, by the way. Little children, very innocent, very mean. If you see kids kill each other over the same fire truck or a doll they want to play with, it's like, so why? It's human nature. So what should you do with it? Make a parade for it? Sing and dance, it's my nature? No, do something about it. Change your nature. The whole Torah was given for us to become different than the way we were born. That we should change our nature. That we should elevate ourselves. That we should reorient ourselves. That people are born angry and arrogant and conceited and slothful and disinterested. Everybody's born with one of those or a number of those wonderful gifts. What should you do with it? Change it. That's called becoming a mensch. People say, I'm only human. No. You're actually supposed to become human. In Yiddish, a mensch, right? Human and a mensch. What do we say? In Yiddish expression, ver a mensch. Become a mensch means don't just sit back and that's how I am. No, animals are the way they are. We're supposed to change ourselves. So there's no reason to suggest that people changed from after Matan Torah to before Matan Torah. In fact, that would make no sense. That would invalidate all the Torah's lessons. And therefore, the idea of Shiva Simei Mishta, 7 days of rejoicing, that is a halachic institution. So why do we have this halachic institution? Or who instituted the idea of Sheva Brachot? Who instituted it? The sages. The Rambam says Moshe Rabbeinu instituted it. The question is, the Medrash says otherwise. The Medrash says that the Chachamim in the generation of Moshe Rabbeinu instituted it. The Kesef Mishnah answers very simply. Kesef Mishnah says it's impossible to fathom that the Chachamim in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu would have done something without the input and approbation of Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Rambam calls it Moshe Rabbeinu. But this is from the first generation of rabbis. Moshe Rabbeinu and the rabbis in his time instituted the Sheva Yemei Mishnah, the Sheva Brachot. But the Sheva Brachot are a halacha. And that halacha cannot be learned from before Matan Torah. Which means to say that any custom we do from the wedding of Yaakov, and there are many customs, I'm going to talk about that in a minute, that's not halacha. It's like we lean on that. We're trying to connect ourselves to the past. We want to lift strands that our chuppah is woven of strands from 3,700 years of Jewish tradition. But it's not halacha that's binding. We see that Rivka was veiled. We see that Leah was veiled. We presume by this point Rachel must have been veiled too. But what was the difference between Leah's marriage and Rachel's marriage? Yaakov married a veiled woman. Who did she end up being? Somebody else. You think a week later he didn't check under the veil first? It doesn't say it. I guarantee you he checked the veil first. In fact, if she was veiled, Yaakov said, I'm going to veil her this time. I'm not taking chances with this loving guy.
three whites, four whites.
And now, you ever been to a Jewish wedding? Who veils the bride? The chassan himself. Why?
Because that's how they did it. You can tell me it's halachically binding. It's not halachically binding. It's a custom.
But we see from the Pirkei Der Belezer, we could lean on customs from then. We do lean on customs from then. In fact, unless I'm making a big mistake, the Moroccan custom of la 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 could be coming from the Hilea, Hilea, Hilea that they were screaming at Yaakov's wedding. Okay, it's just a custom. That wasn't such a great wedding. Yeah, I know, but it was a wedding. We don't know what they were singing at Rachel's wedding. In fact, we don't even hear about a wedding. It doesn't seem like there was a mishta. It doesn't seem like there was a great feast altogether. We only hear about Leah's great big wedding. So that big fat Jewish wedding, it only happened once. It didn't happen with Rachel. Rachel had a very small, discreet, private Jewish wedding. With Leah's wedding, it was a big wedding. Why was it a big wedding? Because Lavan had a deception. He was doing something over here. Okay, so but we have one big fat Jewish wedding. So then we try to do what they sing over there. It makes sense to Baraka Minik. So they do Hallelujah, Hallelujah, Hallelujah. Okay, we try to do. So that's what we call minhagim. However, the halacha of Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha, the Rebbe suggests, is not a kviyas in halacha. Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha is not like a halachic thing. You can't mix two joys together. The Rebbe suggests it's a birur of tchunat nefesh ha'adam. The Torah is being megala, the Torah is revealing to you, the Torah is teaching us that people are not capable of fully rejoicing in two separate things at the same time. You can't do that. You can rejoice in one thing at one time. When the Torah says v'samachta b'chagecha, then means v'samachta b'chagecha. If you have a wedding at the same day of a Yom Tov, one or the other is going to be left behind. Either Sukkot is left behind or the bride is left behind. And neither is okay. When you have Simchat Yom Tov, it has to be Simchat Yom Tov. When you have Simchat Chatam V'Kala, it has to be Simchat Chatam V'Kala. You do it all the way. It's a beautiful story that the Friedrich Rebbe was sitting with his father, the Rebbe Rashab, with the Yeshiva Bachram, and they were singing a Nigun, and the Rebbe Rashab was speaking. It was a Fabrengen. He was speaking in between the talking. And the Rebbe Rashab noticed that they were singing the Nigun, the soul-stirring melody, in a not such soul-stirring way. They were singing it rapidly, like kind of getting it over with. So he turned to the Friedrich Rebbe and he said, why are they singing this way? Why don't they sing the Nigun? So the Friedrich Rebbe said to his father, they want to hear Torah. They could sing without you. They want to hear you. They want to hear teachings. They know you're not going to be here for so long, so they want to get this out of the way. So the Rebbe Rashab was unimpressed and he said, a pnimi is what we would call like an inward person, a person who tries to experience things, not just superficially, but tries to really take the experience in. He said, apnimi, said the Rebbe Rashab, wo it is a dort in ganzen. When you're somewhere, you're there all the way. You're not there halfway. Like, it's not so enjoyable when you're with somebody and they're on the phone the whole time, and they're like, you're listening? I'm listening to you. Yeah, yeah. And they're doing something else, right? Like, you say, put the phone down, okay? We're talking now. If you're talking to me, then let's talk. You know what I mean? Like, that's normal. You expect to get the full undivided attention. That's the normal way to do things. Because really and truly, human beings, certainly it's true about men, maybe women not, but men cannot do two things at the same time. It doesn't happen. Women can multitask. But really, when it comes to simcha, which is a inyan nafshi, to rejoice with something, if you're rejoicing, then that's what you are. If this is what you're doing, then that's what you're doing. You do it all the way. So the Torah is telling us about human nature. Ein ha'adam yachol l'smoach karoy ba'af achad men. When you have two simachot, two joys, mixed together, you're not celebrating either of them. Because ha'achat me'arvevet umil babel t'eschavrata. One is mixing and ultimately eclipsing the other. So we can't mix the simachot together. And this is what Lavan told Yaakov, which is very profound. So Lavan was a swindler, but a very profound psychologist too. He said to Yaakov, you can't do that. This is your wife now. You earned this. You're the one who got the blessings. You masqueraded as Esav. You will marry Leah, and then you'll marry Rachel. Because you have to be both. But now you married Leah, so marry Leah now. You have Sheva Brachas. Spend time with your new wife. Get to know your wife. And then we'll talk. Next week we'll talk. But now, this first week, Sheva Brachas, nothing else. Which, of course, leads us into the famous question, how in heaven did Yaakov marry two sisters? Which we learned about a little this morning, but I'm going to develop this a little bit further. So Ramban says that the Avot, the patriarchs, only kept the Torah when they were in the Holy Land of Eretz Yisrael. Which, of course, is extremely problematic because the message that Yaakov Avinu sends to his brother in next week's Parsha is Im Lavan Garti, and the words Garti, scrambled, spelled Taryag, V'Taryag Mitzvot Shamarti. So that's the exact opposite of what the Ramban says. Yaakov says, I did keep the Taryag Mitzvot. Which, of course, begs the other question. You did? You married two sisters. You did not keep the Taryag Mitzvot. Now, the Levush wants to suggest that Rachel and Leah were converts, and we say, Ger shenit gayer ki katan shenola dami. But the Rebbe says, inasmuch as this may be an answer on some pedantic level of scholarship, it doesn't work in Pshuto Shel Mikra. For a five-year-old child, he does not understand what you're talking about. Especially because the reason that we're not allowed to marry two sisters, according to many of the Rishonim, this is talked about in the Sepharno and the Ramban, and a number of other Rishonim, the Chizkuni, they say the reason is very simple. Because two sisters love each other. Sisters are usually close. Brothers are not always close. Not all sisters are close. But it's very, very common for sisters to have a special bond. And by having two sisters married to the same man, you ruin that natural bond. You make them compete with each other. So in general, this whole notion of polygamy is not healthy and not a good idea, and it never worked well. And if you look in every generation, polygamy was not the lechatchila. Avraham Avinu didn't marry two wives. Sarah Imenu encouraged him, at least have a baby, at least when that's not working. So you'll be with Hagar. It was not the ideal situation. Yitzchak had children, and that's it. No other wives. Yaakov was planning to marry Rachel. He ends up with Leah, because now he's a dual personality. And then he ends up with Bilhah and Zilpah, because Rachel says, I want to be like Sarah Imenu. And then Leah says, okay, I want to be like Sarah Imenu too. Okay, so Yaakov is, you know, it's not a lechatchila situation. And it doesn't go so well in the Parsha. It's painful. It's a painful read.
Yaakov kept Taryag Mitzvot? He couldn't have done the Korbanot and stuff like that.
How could he? First of all, why couldn't he do Korbanot?
He didn't have the appointed place. He didn't have a Mishkan or, you know, Beis HaMikdash.
He didn't have a Beis HaMikdash, but he could, in theory, have brought Korbanot. Yaakov does bring Korbanot, actually. Avram brings Korbanot. Yitzchak brings Korbanot.
But not as a mitzvah.
Hold the thought. We know that the Avot kept all the mitzvahs. It says even Erev Tavshilin, which is something that only came about in the Beth Din of Shlomo HaMelech. But already the Avot kept all the mitzvahs. But does it mean that the Yaakov had a pair of tefillin? How could he have a pair of tefillin? In the pair of tefillin, there's parchment. What does the parchment say? It says, I took you out of the land of Egypt. But there was no children to be in Egypt yet. So what could the tefillin say? So the Zohar says it wasn't tefillin. He was mamshech, the hamshachot, whatever spiritual energy had to be brought about through tefillin, he channeled this energy through, it says, through maklot, through sticks. And it says that when he peels away the sticks and he has straps, this is a spiritual way. So it doesn't mean literally that they kept a mitzvot. It means, figuratively speaking, Avraham Avinu was observing Pesach. How could you observe Pesach when there wasn't yet a Jewish people? There weren't yet slaves. So how could they be celebrating Exodus? But Avraham Avinu is eating matzah. Even Lot, the lapsed Jew, the secular Jew, was eating matzah. So they knew at this time of the year, you have to eat matzah. And whether they understood it fully or half or not so much of it at all, they knew this is...
So what's the kasha in the fact that he married...
But here, this is a no-brainer. This is clear. They didn't eat non-kosher food. We believe the Avot didn't eat milk and meat. They didn't eat pork. So why would you marry two sisters? Pshuto Shel Mikra. So there is an opinion that the sisters were actually from two different mothers, but that doesn't fit with the Seder Olam and the Sefer HaYashar, where they were not only from the same mother, but they were in fact twins. So the Rebbe suggests two things. The Rebbe gives two answers. One answer, which we talked about this morning, is that Yaakov was bound by the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, by the seven Noachide laws of Dinim, the Mitzvah of Dinim. Mitzvah of Dinim is to follow the rules, to follow the law. When you make a commitment, you make a promise, you're obligated to follow through. So Yaakov was legally bound. Keeping the mitzvot was what we call a stringency. That was not an obligation. He could elect to be stringent. He could choose to do many mitzvot. He wasn't obligated to do them. But the seven Noahide laws, he was obligated. So you cannot have a minhag, you cannot have a custom or a stringency which overrides a binding halacha. That's one answer. Another answer that Rebbe suggests, at least on the level of Pshuto Shel Mikra, is that the reason for this mitzvah is the Isha El Achaisa, the Torah's words are, in Parshas Achrimos, chapter 18, verse 18, the Isha El Achosa Lotikach Litzror. You shall not take one sister and pit her against the other. Because sisters have a closeness. There's certain magic between sisters. And this would cause them to be tzarot, to squeeze one another, to be so to speak, in competition. So as I mentioned, Ramban, Tur HaAruch, and others, they explain that this is the reason. This is the reason. Yaakov took a look at this situation here. He says, Rachel Imenu was complicit. She made this happen. I gave her signs. She gave me signs. And she betrayed me. She gave all the signs to her sister. In other words, she was more loyal and more worried about her sister's feelings than she was about her own self. And then she came into the room with us. And she was busy ventriloquizing and acting like Leah was her. So Yaakov said, these are not sisters. The situation has not brought out, so to speak, an acrimony and animosity between the sisters. On the contrary, Rachel seems to be totally, totally forgiving. So the person is totally self-effacing. In this case, one could argue that Yaakov understood that the mitzvah wouldn't apply in this unique case. Of course, by the way, you cannot use this logic in today's day and age. You can't argue away a mitzvah, say, the reason of the mitzvah is X, Y, and Z. So since X, Y, and Z doesn't exist, no, we have to keep the mitzvahs. We're bound to the mitzvahs. The avot elected to do the mitzvahs. Very different. Now, insofar as Yaakov saying, Taryag mitzvah shamarti, as I mentioned this morning, he doesn't say, Taryag mitzvah asiti. He doesn't say, I did. What does it mean, shamar? Shomar means I kept them. I was mindful of them. Yaakov Avinu said, I was mindful of the mitzvahs. I tried to keep the mitzvot. Meaning, I didn't just marry two sisters. I made a shikol. I made a calculation. I looked at the situation. I said, how does this situation square with mitzvahs I'm trying to keep? To flagrantly violate mitzvahs is not to watch them. I don't care. mitzvahs. I'll do what I want to do. Yaakov said, I didn't do what I want to do. I wanted to do mitzvahs. I wanted to do what's right. And so I had to analyze and agonize and think about every detail. What do I do now? How do I go from here? So in fact, to say that Yaakov was violating the mitzvahs, you cannot say that. What's a perfect example of this? Shmirat Shabbat. Keeping the Shabbat. A person gets in a car and drives somebody to the hospital. Is he not a Shomer Shabbat? He would not be a Shomer Shabbat if he didn't drive the person to the hospital. But what do you mean? On Shabbat, this is a forbidden activity, and the activity on Shabbat. So clearly not keeping the Shabbat. What's the answer? That's how you keep Shabbat when somebody's life's in danger. That's how you do it. If somebody would eat non-kosher food because otherwise they'll die, would you say he violated the mitzvah of kashrut? No. That's how you keep the mitzvahs. V'chaibahem, you have to stay alive. That is the mitzvah. So when we talk about the concept of shmirat ha-mitzvot, we're not speaking necessarily of doing all the mitzvahs, we're speaking about mindfulness of the mitzvahs. But factually speaking, from all of this, clearly this very unusual, we call it the wackiest wedding ever. I mean, like, I don't know of any other story where the groom got married to somebody else and found out the next morning he married the wrong. I never heard of such a story. Could be there is, I never heard of it. And that the father-in-law planned it and the sister was in on it? And yet, a lot of our minhagim come from this. As we said, could be even the music we sing. Could be even... Incidentally, I'm not making it up entirely the music. I do remember I did see something. Now I just remembered. Okay. So, with regard to the... apparently, that was the case. There is, in Masechet Nedarim, there's a story about the wedding of Rabbi Shimon, the son of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, son of Rabbi. That Bar Kapara said to the daughter of Rebbe, why did you tomorrow at the wedding? So I'll dance and you'll do the singing. That's what Bar Kapara said to her. But that doesn't make sense because we don't do that. I mean, like Kol Isha, how would he say you sing and I'll dance? How could Bar Kapara do that? According to Kol Bishaev and the Gemara Bracha, some of the Rishonim say it's Minat Torah. The reason that Moshe Rabbeinu led the men singing separately and Miriam led the women singing separately was because of the idea of modesty. How could Bar Kappara say that? So the Ben Yehoyada says that this was not music. This was la 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 la. I don't know how to do that, you know. This was a voice. This was, la 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 la. This wasn't an actual thing. And he says in Arabic it's called Haliel. Yes? Am I saying it right? Something like that? So he says, this is the idea, this is not called singing, this is called a beat. Like, you know, people do the beatbox music. So this was Bar Kappara. She did the la 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 and he did the dance. And then the Ben Yehoyada says that this is the reason that we have this minig, that when Yaakov was brought in, they were screaming, Haliyah, Haliyah, Haliyah. And he says, this is the reason that they do Haliel. And that's why it's common that who does the halalalala? The women. See? So it's actually, glad I remember that. Okay. So you see, this is something which is in very, very big part of the Jewish people. They're still doing this. The veiled bride, the chassan veiling the bride. You still say l'chaim by the weddings. All of this is really the only wedding we have in actual, the original Chumash. There is no other wedding. Avram and Sarah got married at some point. We know nothing about their wedding. Yitzchak and Rivka, we know they met, and it was amazing shidduch, but we don't know anything about the wedding. We don't know about a party. We know about Yitzchak's party when he was 24 months old, when he got weaned. Big party. Wedding? We don't know anything about that. Maybe it was his bar mitzvah. Okay. Is bar mitzvah we hear about? A wedding we don't hear about? How come? Because it's not relevant for us. That's not where we learn the lessons from. The Torah is not a book of history, it's a book of lessons. Yaakov and Rachel's wedding, not spoken of. Who's the next wedding in the Chumash?
Yosef.
Yeah, Yosef married Asnat. We don't know anything about that wedding. There wasn't any Jews at the wedding. It was just Yosef. He was the only Jew in Egypt. Asnat becomes a convert. When's the next wedding? Moshe and Zipporah. Okay, you know anything about that wedding? No, don't know anything about the wedding. In fact, we don't have any other weddings. There's no other wedding. This is the only wedding ever discussed in the actual Chumash, which is pretty wacky, because the only wedding was this topsy-turvy inside-out wedding, which I think, though, after some of the stuff we share tonight, you have a deeper appreciation of and a better understanding of what this wedding was, what it represented, and why it actually has an influence on us until this very day.